Namagyantimilanjasadhananjanasalakkaya Chakshuram militantina tasma shigrave namaha Shri Chaitanya manobhishtam sapitam jena bhutare Svabhravikiramayam dhrati svabhidandikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Uta Parakamalam Shri Ganan Vaishavam Sha Shri Rupam Sagujatam Saguna Ranganitam Vitamtam Sijivam Sarvetam Savudutam Parichana Setam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Param Saguna Larita Sivasikan Vitam Sha He Krishna Kuruna Sindhu Dhinna Bandhu Jigat Vite Kopesha Gopika Kanda Dhari Kanda Mosu Te Tapti Kanchani Gaurangi Radhi Bindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sutri Vipanamami Hari Priye Vanchika Pashu Vascha Kripa Sindhu Vihavicha Haritananam Pavanebhyo Vaishvebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Sasiri Gaura Vakunda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
He who has brought the treasure of divine love and who was filled with compassion and mercy, where has such a personality as Srinivasacharya gone? Where are my Swarup Damodar and Rupa Goswami? Where is Sanatan? Where is Raghunath Das, the Savior of the Fallen? Where are my Raghunath Bhatta and Gopala Bhatta? And where is Krishnadas Kaviraj? Where is Did Lord Gauranga go, the great dancer? Where did Lord Gauranga, the great dancer, suddenly go? I will smash my head against the rock and enter into the fire. Where will I find Lord Gauranga, the reservoir of all wonderful qualities? Being unable to obtain the association of Lord Gauranga, accompanied by all of these devotees in whose association he performed his pastimes, Narottam Das the cause simply weeps.
Today is the disappearance day of A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And so, rather than the usual Srimad Bhagavatam class, we're going to go straight into a discussion about the significance of Srila Prabhupada and the significance of this today's special occasion. So, some of the things that we can cover is specifically Srila Prabhupada's significance as the founder of Acharya. A little bit of the history leading up to Srila Prabhupada's appearance. His mission, and a little bit about some of the significant events in Srila Prabhupada's mission to preach Krishna consciousness. So first of all, we have a little discussion on the significance of Srila Prabhupada as the founder of Acharya. So that's one of the questions, I believe, when people take, is it first initiation? And then one of the questions they ask, what is it, you know, what is they have to explain what it means to them, the fact that Srila Prabhupada is the founder of Acharya. They have to give some explanation. Because it is without understanding that, of course, it shows that one is not really qualified to actually accept initiation. or to be considered a follower, or to speak of, to go further in Krishna consciousness. So, you know, it's right there in the very beginning, very important to understand. So, in order to understand Srila Prabhupada's position as the founder of Charya, which is a very specific type of activity or function that spiritual masters perform, we can, in order to understand that, it's good to understand the very essence of the guru, the principle of the guru itself, and then that helps us to understand the principle of the founder of Charya, guru. So, the teachings of Lord Krishna, who is the original guru, his teachings, of course, are what is known as his teachings, his instructions is called shiksha. Receiving those instructions, that body of understanding coming from Krishna, that is the shiksha, receiving that instruction. So, transmission of Krishna's instructions is the principal characteristic of a guru. That is their prime business. And, you know, in a general sense, anyone who gives relevant spiritual instruction, which is based upon Krishna's teachings as revealed in the Shastra, and as coming down into cyclic succession, in a general sense, they are, you know, acting as guru. Krishna, in order to disseminate his instructions, Krishna establishes four sampradayas, and those who represent Krishna's instructions, the shiksha, they are the adigurus. So they are the original gurus of the four bona fide, authorized Vaishnava sampradayas. And as we know, there is Brahma, of which we are coming in his disciplic succession. There is Lord Shiva, there is Lakshmi, and there are the four Kumaras. And the duty of all those sampradayas is actually to transmit Krishna's instructions, that shiksha. Now, there are two types of gurus who transmit that shiksha. One is the instructor and one is the initiator. Both are authorized, and they act harmoniously in order to assist the disciple to go back to Godhead. Now, if in the course of time the teachings coming down in the sampradaya become distorted, lost or discontinued, or somehow, according to the time, place and circumstance, people may find them irrelevant, then Krishna sends forth a founder acharya to revive those teachings and to bring that shiksha of Krishna back to its pure original form, so there's no distortion, so that and it's not lost anymore, and also to present those teachings in such a way that they are relevant to the time, place and circumstance over the course of, you know, a long period of time. Just as Srila Prabhupada said that, you know, the teachings that he has put in his books, you know, they will be like the law books for 10,000 years. So that's the role of the founder of the chariot. So both the Shiksha Guru and the Diksha Guru, they are subordinate or servants of the founder of Acharya. They always work under his guidance. In fact, in order to even become a a authorized initiating guru, Diksha Guru, or Shiksha Guru, one actually has to be authorized by the founder of Acharya. So the founder of Acharya's significance always remains the most prominent among the many gurus. As we described, the main characteristic of any guru is this transmission of shiksha in such a way as to help the disciples or the followers to ultimately be trained up in spiritual life and to return back to Godhead. Now, generally, the first most prominent among the Shiksha Gurus will often become the Diksha Guru. And the Diksha Guru will initiate one into chanting the holy name of the Lord and chanting the Gayatri Mantra. And, you know, there is specific instruction that Diksha Guru establishes one's relationship with the Sampradaya all the way to Krishna, and therefore there are specific instructions on Sambandha Gyan, or establishing one's relationship with Krishna through the Sampradaya. So there is one Diksha Guru. There are many types of Shiksha Gurus, and they give different varieties of different training and instruction on training one in spiritual life. The Diksha Guru takes a prominent role, and the Shiksha Gurus, this is the traditional protocol, whereas the Shiksha Gurus, they assist the Diksha Guru in their role, in his role. But one should be very careful not to make the mistake that because the Shiksha Gurus, their instructions are assisting the Diksha Guru, that somehow that makes them inferior to the Diksha Guru. That conclusion would be a mistake. Although there's an etiquette or a protocol which is established since time immemorial to help the disciple and to help to firm up his relationship with, you know, a central person who is guiding them, of which the Diksha Guru generally becomes that person. That doesn't mean that everyone else is assisting that. All the other Shiksha Gurus who are assisting, also giving instruction, become inferior to that Diksha Guru. Not necessarily. Of course, some may be and some may not be, but one should not assume that all are automatically. There is a oneness, and especially because we're discussing the point of the founder of Acharya, one should also be careful not to take the founder of Acharya as one of the subordinate Shiksha instructions that one is receiving as subordinate to one's Diksha Guru. Because that can be a mistake that one thinks that I have many shikshas, my Diksha Guru has a prominent role, the various Shiksha Gurus are assisting him, and to mistakenly think that the Shiksha coming through the founder of Charya is also in a subordinate role to one's spiritual master. See that? But sometimes that can be happened. Therefore, of course, it is very important that this particular occasion, the disappearance day of Srila Prabhupada, is a very prominent day on everyone's calendar, even though one may have an initiating spiritual master and may have, you know, some Shiksha Gurus all held in high esteem. But one should be very careful that, you know, there should be some prominence given to Srila Prabhupada in his role as the founder of Charya, upon which all the Diksha Gurus and Shiksha Gurus are authorized to act in their roles. So there's a oneness in one sense with the the various Diksha Guru, Shiksha Guru, and some, you know, there is also Vatmana Padashaka. There's the Shiksha Guru who first shows one some direction in Krishna consciousness and towards surrendering to Krishna. There's another, you know, role of the Shiksha. So there is a oneness amongst them in that, because all gurus have this primary characteristic of transmitting Krishna's instructions, those instructions are non-different from the Supreme Lord, and therefore those gurus all become as good as God. So there is, you know, a oneness to that, where the instructions of Krishna are actually there, then because those instructions embody are non-different from the Supreme Lord, then that guru is as good as God, being a representative of God. Which brings up the question, of course, that sometimes it's described by Acharyas that there are some Shiksha Gurus even among non-Vaishnava categories, and yet sometimes, not all the time, but their instructions do embody the teachings of Krishna. We saw, of course, we've just read the various instructions by the Avadhuta Brahmana in the 11th canto, and he has taken instruction from, you know, animals and insects and birds and you know, Pingala the prostitute, and so many who are, you know, not actually, they're non-Vaishnavas, but their instructions are completely relevant. So in that case, one can also accept those instructions, but from a distance. In other words, one may not, one will not be misled by wrong association or too close, intimate association with those persons or entities, and to imbibe other characteristics which are non-Vaishnava and other lessons which are, you know, against the Vaishnava principles. But there should be some selection. But still, the principle is that where the you know, actual shiksha or teachings represent Krishna's teachings, then we can take that person as a representative of the Supreme Lord. Of course, the, you know, those who are fully qualified as Diksha and Shiksha Gurus, the instructions are fully comprehensive at all times. So there's a oneness, but at the same time there's a difference in that spiritual qualifications of the Diksha or Shiksha Gurus can vary. Some are highly elevated, spiritually elevated, and some are beginning. Some are liberated and some are not yet liberated. Or some are liberated, fully liberated, and some are, some degrees of liberation. So, in this way, there are also differences. So there is a oneness in that shiksha, that teaching is representing Krishna, and there is differences in their activities, their roles, their functions, and their spiritual status like this. So, our disciplic succession is principally a shiksha disciplic succession, a shiksha parampara. A diksha parampara is one where there's a guru, and then the next lot of prominent instructions are coming from his direct disciple, initiated disciple. Our parampara is a shiksha parampara in that often it is not a direct initiated disciple who is continuing the teachings of the parampara, but one who is one who has accepted the instructions and who is able to teach them, particularly prominently, very well, very expertly. That person becomes sometimes the next acharya, the next link in the chain, which also suggests the importance of the role of the shiksha guru. It is the instructions of the shiksha is particularly important, even more so than who is initiated by who. So, the reason, of course, I'm presenting all this in the first place is because in order to actually make advancement in spiritual life, one has to be able to make these discriminations in order to know how to approach the correct person to get the required instructions and training in the various aspects of spiritual life, and in order to reciprocate with those, the Diksha Guru and the Shiksha Gurus and the founder Acharya, with proper etiquette. Now, if that understanding is not there, then that whole process is not possible. So, therefore, by accepting the principal role of the Diksha Guru, one should not neglect the role of the Shiksha Guru, and nor should one be excessive in their relationship with Shiksha Gurus, that there must be still the proper etiquette and protocol which is carried out between one's initiating spiritual master. And at the same time, one should also particularly pay particular attention to the founder Acharya, who is giving shiksha to all the Diksha Gurus, all the Shiksha Gurus, and all the followers all together. In fact, without understanding the teachings of the founder Acharya, without understanding the mood of the founder Acharya, and without transmitting them, one is not qualified to be even actually a disciple, as we said in the very beginning, what to speak of either for Diksha Guru or Shiksha Guru. Right. If one has no understanding of Srila Prabhupada's teachings, one cannot really become qualified as even as a follower properly. How can one claim to be a follower of Srila Prabhupada or Lord Chaitanya's movement when there's no real practice, if there's no real understanding of Srila Prabhupada? And if one cannot even be properly situated as a beginning follower or disciple, how can one of course claim to be something more, such as an authorized Shiksha or a Diksha Guru? So the principle of the founder of Acharya is particularly important. Therefore, on this day we should understand always for the next 10,000 years at least, each year, there should never be a time in the future when the founder Acharya's position is somehow minimized or reduced. And we're thinking, well, I have my guru, I have my shiksha, but we don't get about hours years ago. If that happens, if that mood is there, then you've got to question the authenticity of the so-called guru, whether they be Diksha, Shiksha, and what to speak of the followers, right? Imagine you get 100 years down the track, there's some very charismatic gurus and what have you, and yet they're not so concerned with Prabhupada, they've got their own, it's similar but something. That would be a disaster. So, therefore, because of that principle, it is extremely important that all devotees pay particular attention to Srila Prabhupada's position as the founder of Acharya. So, therefore, that's just a brief introduction. Srila Prabhupada's life, Srila Prabhupada's teachings, we can sum up in four principles. Preaching is the essence. Hooks are the basis. So preaching is the essence, of course, means Srila Prabhupada foremost representing Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Sankirtan movement, is giving the by preaching means giving the opportunity to turn those who have turned away from Krishna to turn them back towards Krishna. That's preaching. Preaching means they're running away from Krishna, and preaching means you turn them back towards Krishna. That's preaching. The International Society for Krishna Consciousness, they're trying to forget Krishna. And we're the Society for Krishna Consciousness. Now you think of Krishna in your consciousness like that. So preaching is the essence. Books are the basis. That, as we'll go through some nice quotes and stories, Srila Prabhupada relating the particular instructions that he received from his own spiritual master, books are the basis, that is the Brihat Madanga. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to preach Krishna consciousness, particularly through the chanting of the holy names of the Lord, and through the chanting, hearing and chanting of the name, the form, the pastimes, the qualities of the Lord, particularly through chanting the holy name of the Lord. This Brihat Madanga, Kirtan, can be heard for maybe one or two blocks. If we could hear it too much more, our neighbours would probably kick us out of the street and try to. But the Brihatmadanga can actually be heard all over the world in a very pleasing way. So the books are the basis. So we'll hear a little bit more about that. Utility is a principle. Utility as a principle means that whatever facility helps us to preach Krishna consciousness, especially through encouraging people to read and hear and chant through the Vaya Meter, Srila Prabhupada's books, whatever facility is favourable for that should be utilised. No stone should be left unturned. If there is some facility that can be used for that purpose, it should all be fully utilised. Therefore, we say books are the basis, but because utility is the principle, it doesn't allow for, narrow-minded fanaticism that, if someone is not distributing books, they're not really serving Srila Prabhupada. There are utility as a principle, which means that all facility of one's, body, mind and words, the body, mind and words of others, their money, the facility, everything can be utilised for that purpose. And that is also book distribution. Srila Prabhupada used to give the example that when they were building the railroad, they had, they coined the motto, keep the wheels moving. So although there's just one person driving the train, perhaps, maybe a couple of engineers and others driving the train on the tracks, but all the people laying the tracks, mining the steel, everything going towards keeping that train moving, they're all, part of that same movement, that same success. So, and the fourth principle, of course, is purity is the force. That, as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught, that unless one is actually empowered by Krishna, no one can preach the Krishna consciousness movement, no one can distribute the holy name of the Lord, either through the chanting or through book distribution, or even through utilizing things favorably for Krishna. It is not possible to do that without being empowered by the Lord, and to be empowered by the Lord is based upon one's pure desire to actually serve the Lord. So this purity, being pure within the heart and one's activities, allows one to actually preach Krishna consciousness. So that's just a summary of Srila Prabhupada's teachings, the essence of his mission. So now what I'd like to do is to discuss again, to highlight the significance of Srila Prabhupada's requirement to be the founder Acharya, and his qualifications to be the founder Acharya, and the importance of Srila Prabhupada being the founder Acharya. I'd just like to speak a little bit about the general history, going way back to the beginnings of universal time, to just a brief summary. So, of course, the Srila Prabhupada came in the disciplic succession from Lord Brahma, as we described before. So, at the very beginning of universal creation, Lord Brahma was instructed by Lord Krishna himself. So that shiksha was given, transmitted. Lord Brahma then instructed his son Narada Muni. Now, Narada Muni once had a very important discussion with Bhakti Devi. And Bhakti Devi, so we're going right back to the beginning of Brahma's day. But of course, there are some big jumps in this history. So here, because Narada Muni, being the son of Brahma, of course he has that extremely long duration of time as well. So anyway, in this particular day of Brahma, Bhakti Devi said to Narada Muni that she would one day travel to foreign lands. And Narada Muni himself, who also had knowledge of past, present, and future, he also made a prediction to Bhakti Devi that in the Kali Yuga, which we're in now, that Bhakti would actually be established in every house and in every heart. And he assured her that he would preach her message, subdue all other religions, and make Vaishnava festivals prominent, predominant. So these are some predictions by Bhakti Devi and Narada Muni. It's very interesting that on several occasions, Srila Prabhupada, when he was preaching, that he mentioned to his disciples that Narada Muni was present. And on some occasions he asked them, did you see? You know, he was here, like that. So, what's that?
Sahar
Street. Yeah. Is that Lord Shiva? That's Lord Shiva and Narada Muni. That four, yeah.
They still haven't on the altar.
Yes. So, there's a little prediction there, you know, by Narada Muni predicting Srila Prabhupada's presence. These predictions are important because later on I'll read a passage where Srila Prabhupada's talking with his disciples. I forget the exact words he used, but he's saying that, you know, by chance he happened to meet his spiritual master and take up that mission. He says by chance or by prediction, whichever you want to accept, like that. So, you know, he's well aware of these predictions, and well aware of the fact that because he, in actuality, fulfilled that prediction, that the references could well be himself. So Narada Muni, of course, he instructed Vyasadeva. So again, big jump in time, but in this day of Brahma, Narada Muni, that's maybe 5,000 years ago, Srila Vyasadeva compiled the Vedic literature, of which the Srimad Bhagavatam is the cream, the essence, and that Srimad Bhagavatam, of course, is essential. Limb of devotional service for helping people to become Krishna conscious. Vyasadeva later instructed Madhvacharya in the science of Krishna consciousness, and Madhvacharya and his contemporary acharyas and acharyas that followed him at that time, they very strongly smashed the Mayavadi philosophies of Sankaracharya, which were very prominent throughout India. Of course, while this great battle is going on in India in order to pave the way for the full teachings of Lord Krishna to finally be spread throughout the world. Of course, the rest of the world, there, this is what, over 1,000 years ago. Very, very dark ages. If you look at the activities of what was going on, I once had a look at it, just looked at general history, and you compare what the rest of the world's doing with the significant events going on in India, you see that it's quite barbaric and very primitive to a larger extent throughout the rest of the world. There's not much happening there. So, anyway, Madhvacharya, he instructed, there were, gurus coming in the line of Madhvacharya, until Madhavendrapuri, in whom the sentiments that Krishna is trying to arouse through his instructions of pure love of God first sprouted their seed in Madhavendrapuri, and then his disciple, of course, Isvarapuri, became the spiritual master of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Lord Krishna himself, who, taking the role of the Yuga Avatar, established the Yuga Dham of the Sankirtan movement, chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, distributing the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and Prasadam, letting everyone dance and chant and feast and glorify the Lord, in this way making the topmost elevated understanding in spiritual science eligible even to the most fallen people. So this is the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. As Rupa Goswami describes, that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is distributing freely this love of God, which is something that wasn't even done by Lord Krishna himself when he personally appeared once in the day of Brahma 5,000 years ago. So again, we have to try and focus on the significance of the timing of Srila Prabhupada's appearance, that once in this day of Brahma, Lord Krishna appears, and that full manifestation and full understanding of spiritual subject matters is made available by Krishna's personal experience. So Krishna's appearance is a very, very significant event in this day of Brahma. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then appearing 500 years ago, so that's his that reappearance of Krishna in the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that is even more significant. It's a more rare event than the appearance of Lord Krishna, and the confidential teachings that is distributed by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are even more relishable than what Krishna allowed others to enter into. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he, in order so that this Krishna consciousness, of course here we have this phenomena where Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in the course of millions and millions of years, is giving this rare opportunity, and he's freely giving this most elevated opportunity for Krishna consciousness to people who are even the most fallen. So naturally, when something is given so freely, one will naturally take that very cheaply. Oh, well, he's just, he's given it away. And maybe he doesn't want it. Oh, I don't want it either. No, no. So, but in order for people to properly understand how, you know, rare and wonderful the supreme gift, you know, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he asked the Goswamis, his direct disciples, the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, to, you know, write the literature based, you know, from the Vedas, Vedic literatures, which help people to, you know, really understand how, you know, wonderful this chant, this Sankirtan movement is. So the six Goswamis, they actually presented that literature. Now, of course, here we can see that what was began at the very dawn of creation with Krishna instructing Brahma, and then millions and millions of years later, when the Lord Krishna appears to give the full installment of spiritual understanding, it still has to be distributed all over the world. So Jiva Goswami, he began the first, you know, book distribution party or Sankirtan party, you know, after the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of course, and he gathered and, you know, finalized all the scriptures that the Goswamis were working on, including the history of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and discussions of Lord Krishna and Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, and you know, the essence of Vedic literatures and the instructions for Vaishnavas. And he personally trained Narottam Das Thakur, Srinivas Acharya, Shyamananda Prabhu, under the guidance, under the instructions and the direction also of Janava Mata. And then those devotees went and distributed that knowledge throughout India and made the Vaishnava Sankirtan movement more and more firmly established and understood and accepted. Unfortunately, after some time, just because of the very nature of, you know, the, you know, powerful covering of ignorance that's in this material universe, especially in Kali Yuga, that teaching became lost. You know, how powerful is the material energy that even after a short time, that teaching. So between the Goswamis and Narottam Das Thakur and Srinivas distributing, within some time, still, it again become covered over. Just the powerful nature of this material energy. So, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he again kick-started reviving an interest in studying the works of the Goswamis of Vrindavan, their literature, and by teaching them and also presenting them in more simplified works, whereas more readily accessible. Gradually he appreciated that as time went on, people had less and less ability to just read the works of the Goswamis, and they had to be presented in, you know, some of the essential teachings in a more easier to accept form. So, and of course, at that time, the Vaishnava, the Brahma, Madhva, Gaudiya Vaishnava line was in such peril that it was literally challenged that it really had no proper existence at all. That those who are in this line basically are not qualified to do anything, you know, with regards to accepting, you know, worshipping the deities and teaching, you know, Vedic literatures and what have you. So much had it been, you know, lost and covered over. So his disciple, Srila Baladeva Vidyaprasad, he actually wrote the Govinda commentary and in this way defeated the arguments of all those, you know, all the prominent, powerful pundits and, you know, gurus and what have you, who opposed the Gaudiya, Brahma Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya. So in this way, it was once again re-established. But again, you know, after about 200-300 years, 250, maybe 300 years after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, again, by the very nature of Kali Yuga, again it was lost. It was then it was Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. The teachings were not lost to all. There were personalities like Jagannath Das Babaji, who lived, you know, for well over maybe 130 years or something, who literally bridged the gap of several, you know, generations of guru disciple and kept the pure teachings within his own spiritual practices, within his own, you know, but he didn't preach very widely, but it was there, kept. And of course, he instructed Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Srila Gaura Kishore Das Babaji, who became the initiating spiritual master of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, and he also gave instruction to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. But Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he again kick-started the movement by, you know, he wrote over 100 books on, you know, Vaishnavism, and he pointed out very, very carefully, very scientifically, all the deviant sects of, you know, so-called Vaishnavas, and how they were deviating, and he, by making this comparison and by scientifically writing the science, expounding the works of the Goswamis in his writings again, in sometimes in very simple language, he again established that Vaishnavism coming in the line, the Brahma, you know, Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya is completely authorized and has the, you know, essential, is actually the direct line coming from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, from Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It is the prime authorized Sampradaya for disseminating the Shiksha of Krishna consciousness. So, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, when he was leaving this world, he actually described, well, he said to his son, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati, that his mission was not actually complete, and that he wanted his son, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati, to complete that, to continue that, expanding that mission of spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world. In other words, to fulfill, you know, those predictions that were made long before by Narada Muni and Bhakti Devi herself, and also by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Lord Nityananda, who also predicted that this Sankirtan movement would spread all over the world. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he said, a personality will soon appear to preach the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he will move unrestrictedly all over the whole world with his message, with the message of Lord Chaitanya. So he made that prediction. That person will soon appear. And his strong desire, which he passed on, of course, in disciplic succession, was that he wanted to see the day when Vaishnavas would come from all over the world and they would come to Mayapur and they would dance together and chant the holy names in ecstasy. So he passed on that mission to his son, which is the same mission that was there by wanted by Lord Krishna, actually in the very beginning of universal creation. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he very strongly preached Krishna consciousness all over India, very soundly establishing. I think he established 64, you know, principal mutts. He established the Gaudiya mutt, and you know, very soundly established Krishna consciousness once again in India, with a very sound philosophical understanding of what Krishna consciousness is, so that people wouldn't confuse, you know, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's magnanimous gift of love of God through chanting as something cheap and, you know, like that. Then, of course, if we ended our story there, then at that stage, that wouldn't be very good. But this is, you know, at this stage, of course, it almost did end there. Because in order for when Śrīla Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakura was leaving, you know, this world, he had instructed his disciples that because of the, you know, powerful nature of Kali Yuga, that just strong covering force that's there, that don't anyone try to be the one single guru. You form a GVC and work together cooperatively to spread Krishna consciousness. Now, when he departed from this world, they neglected that instruction, and therefore, individually, they were not spiritually powerful enough to actually preach Krishna consciousness. And literally, you know, so much of what the Śrīla Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakura had achieved, what to speak of expanding that all over the world, you know, was smashed to pieces because they, you know, fought amongst each other, you know, within the courts and what have you, and there was a lot of internal turmoil as to, you know, who would be guru and who would have control. So actually the story almost, so imagine that, after millions and millions of years, you know, from Krishna's first instructions to Brahma, and then, you know, even if you just take 5,000 years from Krishna, again coming personally from the spiritual world, or even from 500 years, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, a very rare appearance, if the story had it ended there. But, despite the fact that all looked black, everything was in turmoil, everything looked like that was it, that was the end. And once again, you know, Kali Yuga, the material energy, Maya, would cover everything up, and this time for good, enter Śrīla Prabhupāda. At this stage, Śrīla Prabhupāda, you know, literally had to take hold of those teachings and not only save them from going, you know, being covered over, but he had to take them and do what his spiritual master asked him and literally spread those teachings all over the world, which is unheard of, you know, practically in the course of this universe. The teachings that he was carrying were so elevated. The teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, describing the most confidential aspects of pure love of God and how that can be easily attained through the Sankirtan movement, so such a rare treasure. And he had to prevent that from being lost, what's more, take that and distribute it all over the world. And of course, when we say distribute it all over the world, that means you have to take that gift to people who are just immersed in sinful life and who are, you know, trying their best to forget God altogether. It's a challenge. You know, sometimes we're given a service and we think, oh, gee, you know, I don't know if I'm capable of doing that. Imagine, you know, that challenge. You know, if you just consider, you know, the preparations, so many acharyas, you know, how they, you know, fought and worked so hard to establish each stepping stone towards that goal. And of course, you can also see you know, Lord Krishna's hand, you know, working in the background. Because, you know, at the same time that he is sending Srila Prabhupada to do this, you know, unimaginable task. And Srila Prabhupada said, yes, I will do it. Although, we'll read a little bit later, his thoughts from the first time he heard this mission, right up to, you know, he's actually doing it. We'll hear that in a moment. But, you know, from the very beginning he accepted that mission. And therefore, from the very beginning, Krishna was making arrangements, facility. So, you know, in many different ways. So, this is the significance, of course, of the founder Acharya. That if there was no founder Acharya, no ordinary devotee could do this. You know, the founder Acharya, their contribution is very, very prominent. Most prominent. The topmost prominent. And their, you know, understandably, therefore, a very, very confidential and empowered servant of the Supreme Lord. And therefore, their teachings are very authorized and very comprehensive. You know, they're fit to be the guru of, you know, the very word Prabhupada means. You know, that guru, that spiritual master, at whose feet many, many spiritual masters sit. That powerful guru. He's such a powerful spiritual master. All the gurus come to his lotus feet. Offer their respects with great awe and reverence. Very elevated. So, that's just a little history. Again, once again, to understand the contribution, the significance of the founder Acharya. So, again, in order to therefore now understand it, we should very seriously, especially on this day, but throughout the whole course of our devotional lives, we should very seriously pay prominence to the, you know, founder Acharya, you know, his mood, his teachings, his examples. And by this, by keeping, you know, a very, very tight grip on the founder Acharya, this movement, this ISKCON movement, will actually be there in 10,000 years from now. But as soon as that, you know, grip on the lotus feet of the founder Acharya is lost, then the material energy is so powerful, so very, very powerful, especially in Kali Yuga, you should just immediately swallow up everything, and everything can be lost. So, what I'm going to do here is just read some of the, just in point form, just a very brief history of Srila Prabhupada, just some of the major events in his life. And then what we'll do is, there's about four events there that we can, specifically, you know, the instructions and the meetings with Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, Srila Prabhupada's realizations of those meetings. And we can, you know, discuss those at further length. So, Srila Prabhupada himself was born by Chalanday, was his name, and he's born on the 1st of September 1896, when he was about 4 or 5 years old. He began his own Bhakti Yatra. When he was about 5 or 6 years old, he began his own deity worship. about the age of 7 or 8, he entered the Mati Lal Seal Free School. Unfortunately, when he was about a teenager, 15 to 16 years old, his mother, Rajani, died. When he was 19 to 20 years old, he entered the Scottish Church's College. And when he was about 21 to 20 years old, he married Radharani Dutta. Now, at the age of about 23 or 24, he rejected his college diploma and began dressing as a Gandhian, follower of Gandhi. And in that same year, he travelled to Jagannath Puri for the first time. In 1921, he began working as a department manager in Dr. Kartika Chandra Bose's pharmaceutical company. He was about 24, 25 years old. Now, his first meeting, which we'll discuss a little bit later, with Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati, his initiating spiritual master, at the age of about 25, 26, was in 1922. After this, he moved to Allahabad and started the Prayag Pharmacy. During that time, he was about 28, 29, he visited Vrindavan for the first time. Later, he encountered disciples of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta at Allahabad and helped them start an Allahabad branch of the Gaudiya Math. So when he was about 33, 34, his father, Gaur Mahan, died. So in 1932, he travelled to Kosi where he heard Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati speak for the second time. He was 36 years old. It says here, 28th of October 1932. Sometimes I've noticed that, you know, these dates can vary a fraction. Sometimes you read the Lilamrita, they give a date. You read another book, they give a slightly different date. You know, we're pretty close. So, now, so that's the 28th of October that's listed there. As I think this list I got from the database, you know, connected with Prabhupada Lilamrita. So in November of 1932, so this is just very shortly after that, he received initiation from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati at Allahabad, and we'll hear a little bit more about that. He went to Bombay on some business and helped some of his godbrothers establish a Bombay branch of the Gaudiya Math. Now, in 1935, he met Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati again at Radha Kund, which is also a very significant meeting. Srila Prabhupada's meetings with Srila Bhaktisiddhanta were probably, maybe 10 or, in these, so about 10 days, over three meetings. So it wasn't a lot. Now, just shortly, on the 13th of December 1936, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati wrote to a boy asking him to preach the message of Lord Chaitanya in English. So he's asked him before, from the very first time they met, he'd asked him, and then again, and then straight after he wrote this letter, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati passed away in Puri. So that was his final instruction. Now, Bai and his family moved their business back to Calcutta. He moved to Calcutta. Bhaktisiddhanta passed away in 1st of January 1937. And the last instruction was on the 13th of December 1936. So it was about just a few weeks later. A few weeks after Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati wrote the letter, he passed away. In 65, so that's about 28 years. From 1937, it's about 28 years. Then he moved back to Calcutta. In 1939, his godbrothers honoured him with the title Bhaktivedanta because it was recognised that he was a great master in the understanding presentation of Srimad Bhagavatam and related Vaishnava literatures. Now, 1944, again, began the Bhakti Godhead magazine. Different events also happened during this time. In 1952, he began his preaching in Jhansi, and in 1953, he initiated his first disciple, Acharya Pravakkar. And he, 1953, he also had a grand opening of the League of Devotees. So in 1954, due to various circumstances, he left his family, retired from family life, and the next year he left Jhansi because that had situation had collapsed, and he went to Mathura. In 1956, he moved to the Vamsi Gopalaji Temple in Vrindavan. In 1960, he acquired quarters in Delhi. He published his first book, which was Easy Journey to Other Planets. And in 1961, on Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's appearance day, he submitted an offering sharply criticizing his godbrothers for not following their spiritual master's orders. So in 62, he moved to from the Vamsi Gopalaji temple to Radha Damodar temple in Vrindavan for writing the Srimad Bhagavatam. In 62, he published the first volume of the Srimad Bhagavatam, first volume, Canto 1. 2 years later, he published the second volume, and same year, he actually gave the Prime Minister a copy of one of those volumes. In 31st of August 1964, on Jamnastami Day, he held a festival at Radha Damodar Temple for promoting his Bhagavatam volumes and promoting his mission of preaching abroad. In 1965, he published his third volume of the Srimad Bhagavatam. He received the No Objection Certificate from the Indian government. He received his passport, and Sumati Maharaji agreed to send Bhaktivedanta Swami to America. He obtained his visa, and on the 13th of August 1965, he set sail from Calcutta for the United States. At that age, he was about 68 years old at that stage. So that's a very brief summary of Srila Prabhupada's life, and some of those things we'll actually discuss a little bit more detail. But Srila Prabhupada, of course, then came to America, and the mission of spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world unfolded, and I've actually just written a little summary here of Srila Prabhupada's achievements, especially after arriving in America. Some of these things he did were incorporated in his previous to arriving in America. But we have 1,989 recorded lectures. So that's what we have recorded. That's nearly 2,000 recorded lectures on Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Nectar Devotion, Nishabhanishad, Brahma Samhitas, There's lectures at festivals, weddings, initiation, cornerstone ceremonies, arrivals, departures, general lectures, many philosophical discussions, and they include purports to very famous songs by the Verse of Charis. There's also probably about, you know, nearly 1,500 recorded conversations. Each one of those also, you know, packed, filled with, you know, so many transcendental gems of, you know, spiritual wisdom. Now, during the course of Srila Prabhupada's lifetime, we have available 6,341 recorded letters. So, he wrote over 80 books and many other articles and poems, songs and homages. Of course, he established over 100 temples and also some farms, prasadam distributions, you know, all over the world, every continent of this world. He established the Vedic viewpoint through his scientific institute and trained his disciples how to challenge and defeat the speculative proposals of the scientists and so-called world leaders. He established Vaishnava education through setting up the framework for Gurukul, Varnashram College, and the systematic study of you know, Bhakti Shastra and other certificate awarded studies. He initiated thousands of disciples and trained them, in Vaishnavism. Of course, he maintained the Guru Parampara, which, as we understood, almost collapsed. And but not only that, he expanded the Guru Parampara by actually training many new Diksha and Shiksha Gurus. He circumambulated the world various 10 times to spread Krishna consciousness. And during that time, of course, he hosted thousands of festivals and celebratory ceremonies such as Rathyatra, Jamastami, various weddings for disciples. He delivered millions of people from having to take birth in the hellish species of life. By, you know, so millions of people who would have taken birth, you know, in hellish species, he delivered them. And he spread Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement all over the world. In this way, he fulfilled the dearmost desires of Lord Sri Krishna himself and all of the previous acharyas. So, you know, that's a massive, you know, imagine that on your CV, you know, your, your spiritual CV. It's a massive, just a, you know, if you just take one of those things, just, you know, that he wrote 6,000 letters. You know, if you just take that alone, he'd probably go down in history, you know. But if you take all of those, it's just, it's inconceivable, you know, when you summarise. There's so much. And most of that was achieved, you know, in very, you know, late age, you know, when, you know, it was very difficult for most people just to, you know, get up and get their breakfast and, you know, that's a fact. Where's my slippers? Can't find my slippers. So, again, you know, it sort of underscores, you know, it's not that someone has said, oh, you know, as in most cases, that you just put you know, a badge on someone's sleeve, oh, you know, you're the new sergeant at arms, or, you know. You know, Srila Prabhupada is the founder of Acharya because, one, there was no one else who even considered of fulfilling that role, and no one else was qualified. And Srila Prabhupada, you know, is the founder of Acharya because he was, he had the desire to fulfill that order of his spiritual master. and because of his, you know, qualities, and by just, you know, his complete and utter surrender to that service to his spiritual master. Yeah. No one can ever accuse, you know, why is he the founder of charity? Why not someone else? You know, although people, you know, people have, you know, forwarded themselves, some, you know, brash Vaishnavas, that, oh, you know, I could have done that had I, you know, this, that, and the other. You know, these achievements by Srila Prabhupada firmly place him as undeniably as, you know, the most qualified personality, and therefore the, you know, obvious founder acharya of Krishna consciousness, the Jagat Guru for the whole world. So, you know, I'm just going to keep reading until everyone walks out, but I think we're going to stop at about 10:30. But there's some very nice statements by Prabhupada here describing some of his meetings. So now we're going to actually have a look at the first meeting of Srila Prabhupada and Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. There's some really nice statements here. They're from lectures and conversations and what have you, but they give us a really intimate look at the humility and the very endearing qualities of Srila Prabhupada, and also, you know, that although Srila Prabhupada, you know, is a resident of the spiritual world, we should also understand that when they come down to this material world, they actually participate in a pastime in which they're fully absorbed in that pastime. You know, when Srila Prabhupada was a little boy sitting in school, That's he was thinking like that, you know, like, here I am in school and, you know, learning ABCs and mathematics and what have you. You know, he's not thinking, you know, I am this great Charya destined to spread Christian consciousness all over the world. I am the intimate association with Srimad Radharani. He's actually, you know, relishing this pastime. So, the, you know, his sweet successes over the course of a lifetime, doing the absolute impossible, the unimaginable, you can understand how Srila Prabhupada would relish, you know, sometimes he would just, you know, sit to, you know, chant Jai Radha Madhava, and then just the overwhelming reciprocation and loving transaction that is, you know, unfolding between him and the Supreme Lord in, you know, spreading this Sankirtan movement just overwhelms him, and he's just, you know, almost unable to, you know, the ecstasy just pours out, he's unable to even go on with the song. So understanding that it's important as we, you know, read through this, because if we don't understand that to some degree, we may take Srila Prabhupada's comments about himself in the wrong way, because he speaks of himself, you know, always, you know, just as a very ordinary person. You know, so, because he is literally relishing this pastime himself, and that is the arrangement of the Lord to give him such a life where, you know, he gets to relish this unbelievable, you know, relationship between himself and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to do the impossible, something which is not done within millions and millions of years. And he's relishing that. So here, now, in 1922, the Gaudiya Math began publishing a weekly preaching magazine in Bengali called the Gaudiya. At this month, in 1922, there was the festival there was a faithful meeting with Srila Sarasvati Thakur and Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, in which the seed was planted in the latter to spread Krishna consciousness throughout the world on the order of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. As the Bhaicharan was rising from offering his obeisances, so this is the very first meeting, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta had already asked, "You are educated young men, why don't you preach Lord Chaitanya's message throughout the world?" Although Bhaicharan presented that first India had to gain independence from others for others to take notice of its spiritual message, this argument was easily and comprehensively defeated by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, much to the delight of Bhaicharan. Bhaicharan felt that he had indeed met a very nice, sincere saint person, and later commented that the message of Lord Chaitanya is in the hands of a very expert person. Now, commenting on this, we take an excerpt from a lecture that Srila Prabhupada gave in 1976 on the disappearance day of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. The Prabhupada says, "So whatever I appreciated 40 years ago," so as we said, it was 28 years after 1922 that Srila Prabhupada first met Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. So about 43 years later, he's in America. Actually, this is 1976, so it's about 50 years. "So whatever I appreciated 40 years ago, the same principle is going on. We have no change. What I understood from my spiritual master, I met my Guru Maharaj in 1920 time. At that time, I was quite a young man, 25 years old only, and I was posted in a very responsible position and as the office manager of Dr. Bose's laboratory. And I was fond of, in those days, of Gandhi's movement. In 1922, I joined Gandhi's movement and I gave up my educational career because of one of Gandhi's programs was to boycott the universities." That's a very long story. "And many students gave up their educational career and joined this Gandhi's movement, and I was one of them. So Dr. Bose, Kartika Chandra Bose, he's a very important man. At that time he was managing director of Bengal Chemical Company. Now there is a street in the central Calcutta, Dr. Kartika Bose Street. So he was a very important man, and he was our family physician and my father's very intimate friend. So when I gave up my education and I was joining Gandhi's movement, at that time, Dr. Kartika Chandra Bose asked me to join him. So with the permission of my father, I joined. So I was fond of, at that time, this Gandhi's non-cooperation movement. And then, when I joined Dr. Bose's laboratory, of course, I was dressed in kada." So kada is what, like, kadi, cloth. Woven cloth. Yes, no, it's a European type design, it's sort of traditional village. So Dr. Bose liked that dress, cut a dress. He told me one day that out of your whole Gandhi's movement, I like this cutter only. But Dr. Bose said, "And why? No, because this will give impetus to industry. This hand spinning will gradually give impetus to India." Actually, that happened. He was himself an industrious. And actually, in India, the chemical industry was given birth by Dr. Kartika Chandra Bose. He was a very important man. He started this Bengal Chemical. "So in 1922, I met my Guru Maharaj through the agency of my intimate friend, Mr. Narendranath Mulik. And I would not go. He told me information. There's a nice sadhu, let us go and see. I did not like very much these sadhus in those days. National spirit. So I said, I have seen so many sadhus. They come at my father's care. I was not very much pleased with their behavior. So he dragged me forcibly. No, I have heard this person is very exalted. So I went. At his first opening version, and his first opening version was that, 'You are educated young men. Why don't you preach Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's gospel in the Western countries?' I did not know. So this was his blessing in his first meeting. I did not know, because we belonged to a Vaishnava family. We were very much worshipper of Lord Chaitanya and Nityananda, our family gear. So I was very much pleased that here is a personality who is going to preach Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's gospel. I was very much pleased. So anyway, from 1922 to 1933, practically, I was not initiated, but I got the impression of preaching Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's cult. That I was thinking. And that was the initiation by my Guru Maharaj. Then officially I was initiated in 1933, because in 1923 I left Calcutta. I started my business at Allahabad, so I was thinking of my Guru Maharaj, and that I met a very nice sadhu. Although I was doing business, I never forgot him. So it shows you there that it was a very brief moment, but actually from that very first meeting, Srila Prabhupada considered initiation took place, because he accepted Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakura within his heart. And it shows you again that principle of the shiksha being extremely important in the relationship of master, of spiritual master disciple, you know, parampara system. So that connection of the parampara was established at that very first meeting, although formally he was initiated 10 years later. And from that very first meeting, Srila Prabhupada said he was always thinking how I will preach this cult, as he was, you know, instructed by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. So here's an excerpt from a lecture on Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's appearance day in 1971. Again, some of the information is a little similar, but in each of these excerpts, it just shows, you know, a little. We delve a little bit more into some of the thoughts and the mood Srila Prabhupada had when he received. So, in 1922, I was at that time very much engaged in Congress activity. I was very much devout follower of Mahatma Gandhi, and at that time, I was manager also of a very big chemical concern in Calcutta. One of my friends, he's still living, Sri Narendranath Mullick, he informed me that one saintly person has come, let us go and see. At that time, I was a young man and I did not care very much about so-called saintly persons, because in our house, my father used to receive so many sannyasis, but some of them were not very to the standard. And due to my association with college friends, younger days, I lost my faith practically, although I was born in a Vaishnava family. So you see, a very interesting statement, you know, by Srila Prabhupada. You know, because, you know, you can see it's not lost, but it's more covered, you know. My father was a pure Vaishnava. From my childhood, he gave me Radha Krishna deity for worshipping. A raft. I was playing with my boyfriends, Rath Yatra, like that. My father encouraged. So I was trained up in this line. But in my youthful age, when I was a college student, gradually by their bad association or something, gradually I lost all my activities. So that's what he's saying is lost. Not so much what's going, you know, in his heart, but, you know, literally he packed up his Radha Krishna deities in a little box, and, you know, he wasn't doing but when this friend Mr. Mullick took me to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj, he immediately asked me that, you're educated young boys, why don't you take up Lord Chaitanya's message and preach in the Western world? In the very first sight, he told me, it was the first time he looked at it. At that time, I argued with him that we are a dependent nation, and who is going to hear about our message? So he defeated my argument. Yes, he defeated my argument. He was learned scholar. What was I? I was still a boy. So I agreed. Prabhupada laughs. I agreed that I was defeated. So after finishing our visit with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, I got some impression that here is a nice person who has taken Lord Chaitanya's message very seriously, and now it will be preached. My friend asked me my opinion. That was, what is your opinion? So I gave this opinion, that here is the person who has taken Lord Chaitanya's movement very seriously, and now it will be preached. So that was in 1922. So in 1923, I left Calcutta on business account, and I started my business in Allahabad. But I was always thinking of my Guru Maharaj, although I was, at that time, not initiated, but the impression was there. I was thinking, I met a very nice, saintly person. So, read another excerpt here. This is an interesting statement by Srila Prabhupada on this point. He said, so this is again from another lecture on Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's appearance day in 1969. He says, so in Calcutta, Guru Maharaj started in 1918, and I think in 1922, when I was a young man, one of my friends, he took me to Guru Maharaj. That was my first meeting. And of course, he was speaking to everyone, but he found me as something. So immediately after my meeting, he said this, that why don't you preach this Chaitanya's cult in the Western countries? That is a memorable day. Of course, I did not know that I would have to do it. You see, I could not understand at that time, you see. I talked with him in so many ways. Who will hear your Chaitanya's message? We are a dependent country. The Prabhupada says, so, I was married in 1918. I got my first child in 1921. So in 1922, when I saw my Guru Maharaj and when I was convinced about his argument and mode of presentation, I was so much struck with wonder. I could understand that here is a proper person who can give real religious idea. That I appreciated at that time. And at that time I thought, this great personality is asking me to preach. I would have immediately joined, but now I'm married. It will be injustice. Of course, I thought like that, in that way. Of course, Guru Maharaj did not say anything that you give up your family life. No, never said. He simply gave the idea. So I thought it would have been better if I was not married. Again, it's the same person, but it's interesting to see all the different nuances of what was actually going through Srila Prabhupada's mind while he's relishing this pastime. Now, here's a lecture. Again, it is another of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, the course appearance day lectures. Now, Prabhupada is saying that, 101 years ago, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, the course, he appeared on this day, and he is Gaura Shakti. Gaura Shakti means empowered by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he wanted his mission to be broadcast all over the world. He desired. So, of course, keep in mind as I'm reading this, we're seeing this, we're trying to understand first the importance of the founder of Chara, and then having established, the understanding of the founder of Chara, then we're trying to, look into the mission of the founder of Chara. And you can see here that from the very beginning, his mission is to preach Krishna consciousness all over the world. So, this is one of the... If we don't go away at the end of today's disappearance day celebration with that understanding, then somehow, you know, we failed individually and collectively to present, you know, the significance. So everyone who must follow in Srila Prabhupada's footsteps must imbibe this, you know, preaching is the essence, must imbibe it. And it is the essence of Srila Prabhupada's relationship with his spiritual master. From the very first sight to the last letter.
So, 101 years ago, that was the passing down in,
well, from when? Yeah,
what year was that letter?
75, Srila Prabhupada saying that, and as we know, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta passed away in 37.
101 years before that, so what's 74?
Yeah, you know, sometimes the between what Srila Prabhupada sometimes means to say, it doesn't always translate properly into what how he says it in English, and sometimes there are just some, you know, quick mathematical calculations which are a little astray. So so he desired Pitaviti Achi Yata Nagarari Gram Savatra Pachala Hoivin Moranam. So of course you know, that adds to the, you know, attractive nature of Srila Prabhupada. Very interesting to see that, you know, when he first went to America, you know, they didn't see him also as Gaura Shakti, this, you know, divine, empowered saint of a caliber that is rarely seen, you know, within, you know, millions of years. They didn't. They saw this, you know, grandfatherly type of figure who needed them to look after him. So, a lot of this is the arrangement of the Lord so that they will have that mood, you know, and that they will be in the mood of rendering him service. You know, a lot of people render service to Srila Prabhupada inspired by the Lord, not because they thought he was some great acharya, because they thought he was this, you know, genuine elderly man who needs a little helping hand. So, you know, these are all, even sort of Prabhupada's mistakes are going on under Krishna's arrangement to, you know, give the appearance of, you know, a genuine elder man who's in need of assistance. And that gives the most fallen people who ordinarily not interested in religion, but just to help a grandfatherly person, they'll do something. So, Pritiviti. All over the world, as many towns and villages were there, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that predicted that his mission will spread. This prediction was made by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally 500 years ago. So perhaps my Guru Maharaj, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakura, attempted to fulfill the desire of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And sometimes in the year 1918, he was Brahmachari, and Bhaktivinoda Thakura, his material father, he wanted Bhaktivinoda Thakura. Of course, everyone wanted, but he wrote one small book, Teachings of Lord Chaitanya, Teaching and Precepts of Lord Chaitanya, in 1896, and he presented that book to the McGill University in Canada, and he very much desired that the foreigners, especially Americans, would join this movement. Yeah, of course, when we say especially Americans, they understood, even Bhaktivinoda Thakura and Srila Prabhupada also understood that the world is following America. If they will take something, the rest of the world will take it. There's a saying in Bengal that, you know, because sometimes there's a, you know, if there's if you want all the animals to go into a pen. They say if you can get one animal, one of the sheep or the goats into the pen, you've got them all. So that's, they knew that particularly if we get America to take up this Krishna consciousness, the rest of the world will follow, and that's a fact. Yes, well, that's a good one, too. That's a good one. Yeah. So, that was his desire in 1896. And then, 1918, my Guru Maharaj started with this mission, one institution known as Gaudiya Math. Perhaps some of you know the name, Gaudiya Math. And he was trying to spread this message of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and by chance or prediction, as you think, I was taken to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur by one of my friends. I did not want to go there, but he forcibly took me there. Yes, and he ordered me that you preach the cult of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in English language. This is very much essential. So on the first meeting, he told me like that. That was my first meeting with him. So at that time, I was in favour of Gandhi's movement. So he describes how, again, how Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati defeats. That the real need is, he says, this so-called nationalism or anyism, they are all temporary. The real need is self-realization. So I was convinced. But at that time, although he wanted me to immediately join him and spread this movement, I was a married man. I was married in 1918 and I got a son also at 1921. And in 1922 I met him. At that time I was manager in a big chemical factory. So I thought that I'm a married man. I've got so many responsibilities. How can I join immediately? It is not my duty. Of course that was my mistake. I should have joined immediately. I should have taken the opportunity immediately. But Maya is there. So I thought like that. So that's a long history. So, yeah. Again, you see that. Srila Prabhupada, in the mood of an ordinary person. And, again, one may question why, the Lord would want us to see such a spiritually elevated person. Literally acting and in the mood of an ordinary person. But if you go through each and every one of the events in Srila Prabhupada's life, you will see that they're synonymous with events that we face. And the same thoughts that will go through our head, Srila Prabhupada, Lord Krishna arranged that they go through his head as an ordinary person, but the trick is to resolve those thoughts in the way Prabhupada did, that gives us something to follow, because we're ordinary people and we think, well, he is this divine personality, Guru Shakti, empowered personality from the spiritual world. How can we, we're ordinary people, can we really follow him? But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is presenting this pastime of Srila Prabhupada specifically to give us and people for all time who consider themselves ordinary people this, yes, I can follow that. That's what I was thinking, when I was asked, chant Hare Krishna or, take Krishna. Yeah, that's the same thing. We're all faced such a, same situation. So, gradually we understand when we look at Srila Prabhupada's devotional service and realizations that he certainly wasn't an ordinary person. But, in this pastime, it gives us something to follow. In the same way, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, although he is God, he also, in many ways, acted like, an ordinary person, even Krishna. And when they act in that way, it's because they're giving an example that people are inspired to follow. In the same way that an adult, you know, sometimes they act, they do things as if they're a child, and the child thinks, oh yes, I'm encouraged to do that, that's within my grasp. If the adult only does things which are impossible for the child to do, the child becomes discouraged that I can never follow that. So it doesn't make the adult a child on that level. It makes the adult more wonderful because of that, you know, reaching out. So this activities that Srila Prabhupada, where he appears like an ordinary person, makes his, makes him more lovable. The fact that he would, you know, come down to our level so that we can make little achievable steps on the spiritual path. So, what I'm going to do, there's a few more excerpts in that sort of line. I'm not going to read them all. I'm going to skip to the next meeting. So we're going now to Now, when we say the second meeting, of course, this will include that Srila Prabhupada met Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur in Koshi, in Vrindavan, and then within a matter of days or weeks, he was initiated. So that's all part of this meeting. So, in October 1932, the month-long 168-mile circumambulation of Brajamandala was held with great pomp and festivity, accompanied by thousands of pilgrims. At night, they set up a city of tents where kirtan, discourses and prasadam were enjoyed by the pilgrims. However, the pilgrimage encountered opposition from the Vrindavan temple proprietors, the caste Goswamis, who objected to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's awarding the brahminical status to those not born in Brahmana families. Even though he had established this practice in accordance with the teachings of Hari Bhakta Vilas by Sanatana Goswami, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta met with the pundits and a discussion took place. However, when the parikram reached these seven main temples, the doors were closed. Shopkeepers closed their shops, and some people even threw stones at them. Finally, they reached Koshi. It was here that Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta met Srila Bhaktisiddhanta again. He sat hearing Bhaktisiddhanta with rapt attention for many hours. At the conclusion of the parikram, he proceeded to Allahabad to oversee the laying of the foundation stone of Sri Rupa Gaudiya Math in Allahabad. So that's Bhaktisiddhanta went there. And it was there that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta awarded A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami first and second initiation, saying, yes, he likes to hear, he does not go away, I have marked him, I will make him my disciple. So, now, Prabhupada says of his initiation, because, you know, as we pointed out before, he considered the initiation took place in the first meeting. So, a couple of comments here. Prabhupada was saying, so all the days I was thinking of this, I saw a very nice saintly person. So I was thinking like that. Practically, he initiated me because I was thinking of him always. In another lecture, he says, and in 1933, I was initiated officially, although I was initiated in 1922. But officially, I was initiated in 1933. Although from 1922 to 1933, I was always thinking of His Divine Grace, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Goswami Maharaj. So, here in a letter to Mr. Nakano in Delhi, Papa says, I met my spiritual master, the late Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami, 1922, and he desired me to preach in the foreign countries the spiritual movement started by Lord Chaitanya for enlightenment of all materialistic men all over the world. He gradually turned my mind from matter to spirit, and I was accepted as his disciple in 1933 after full association of 10 years. He left this world in 1936 and insisted to explain the mission in English. Now, here Prabhupada describes the incident of him not going on the parikrama but staying to hear his spiritual master. There's a morning walk in 1976. When I was visiting, I used to sit on his couch. This is actually another funny incident where Srila Prabhupada actually sat on the same couch as Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So he's saying, when he says, you know, it's in this first meeting, it's talking about these days, sort of thing. And somewhere within that, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was sitting, and he just went and sat right beside him on the couch instead of, you know, sitting on the floor at his feet like that. So, when I was visiting, I used to sit on his couch. Guru Maharaj was sitting on the couch, so I took him as an ordinary gentleman. So nobody asked me that, you were sitting, get down. No, nobody asked me. Then I was seeing that all the other big disciples are sitting down. So then I began to sit down. Neither Guru Maharaj told me, neither anybody told me. It was like a sofa. Of course, when I first met him, he was sitting on the ground. I was also. At Mathura, there was a party, parikram party, in 1933. So I went to see that party, what they were doing, the Gaudiya Math, out of inquisitiveness. Tamal Krishna says, you mentioned once that most of the parikram devotees, they wanted to go on parikram, but he was speaking. Prabhupada, yes. So I did not go on the parikram, so he very much appreciated. There was an announcement that now parikram will start in the evening at 5 and Prabhupada will also speak. So anyone who wants to hear Prabhupada as Bhaktisiddhanta, he can stay. Otherwise, be ready for going. So about a dozen men remained and all went to parikram. So I was at that time a new man, not exactly new, but not recognized disciple. I did not go. So he saw that I am sitting. I did not go on parikram, and he very much appreciated. I preferred to hear him than go to parikram. That he appreciated. Hari Suri, that was the same time you took initiation? Yes, after that I took initiation. So then. So now, Prabhupada describes a little further on these incidences. This is from a lecture in 1966. He says, this is the factual activities of devotion in devotional society. This Bhadyanta Parasparam. I chant, you hear. And you chant, I hear. So by this process, the transcendental name, the sound incarnation of the Lord, becomes manifest. Manifest so that we can realize God simply by chanting and hearing. Of course, there are some rules and regulations for chanting. But in the beginning, we haven't got to observe those rules and regulations at the present. First of all, let us have the taste for chanting. Then we shall be a little careful that the rules and regulations are followed. Rules and regulations are subordinate thing. Just like you enter an office, you're appointed in some office to work. So on the very day, you do not know all the rules and regulations. But because you do not know all the rules and regulations, That does not mean that you cannot be appointed. First of all, let yourself be appointed. Now, working yourself, you will know that rules and regulations. This is the rules and this is the regulations, just like in my family life, in my life. So now he's going to relate that same instance. And you can see how he's presenting the essence of our philosophy through this incident. When I first met my spiritual master, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Goswami Maharaj, so as a gentleman meets a gentleman, so he was sitting in a couch like that. So I also sat down on that very couch. So I did not know what are the rules and regulations. So when I saw that his other disciples are coming and they are sitting down, so I thought to myself, oh, I have done this wrong. I should not have sat with his divine grace. So of course, I did not get down immediately, but I took it, and from the next day, I did not sit. So yeah, he just stayed sitting there. So the rules and regulations automatically was taught. So that rules and regulations is not very important. The first rules and regulation is that we must have some attachment for this. Then automatically rules and regulations we shall learn. That there will be no difficulty. So we see that again, you know, just Srila Prabhupada in this pastime. Presenting himself as someone, by the arrangement of Krishna, not very well versed in the rules and regulations. We get a lot of people who come to the temples, of course, and in our own dealings with the Vaishnavas and the Guru. And you think back, you know, all the silly things that you sometimes do. But just as Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati, of course, and neither any of his disciples, they all just saw it was an honest mistake. He was just one gentleman appreciating another gentleman sitting down to talk and not noticing that, you know, so much. So, we get that a lot. But we should be very careful not to pounce on someone who makes a little mistake like that. The main thing is that they're coming to Krishna consciousness to be attracted. I remember one time I was at the farm and we were having a Sunday feast. So there was probably about 30 to 40 people, and some of the devotees were sitting down, some guests, a lot of guests, mostly guests, and a couple of devotees were serving, and a couple of the guests were serving. So one of the guests had eaten something and got up to go and serve something else. And when he did that, one of the initiated, full-time devotees, this girl, she screamed out, "Don't touch that!" Like this, and she just screamed and yelled, you know. And this poor man, you know, just literally jumped out of his skin. He's like, everyone's looking at him, like, God, what's he doing? And he's thinking, what have I done? You know, of course, that was the last time I ever saw him. But, you know, it's that sort of thing where it's an obvious mistake, and someone will point it out to them nicely at some stage, but you've got to be careful not to dampen that person who's becoming attached to Krishna consciousness by smacking them over the head with the rules and regulations. But you see here, you know, and all of these pastimes, if you go through all of these pastimes with Srila Prabhupada, you will see like this. It is so important to, know his leela, because it's not like they're somehow divorced from what we will ever experience. Everything we actually experience every single day, if you look at Srila Prabhupada's pastimes, you'll find that he's given us a lovely little pastime which shows the proper principles of how to deal with it. You know? Sometimes there's that, mood that, you know, my guru or my situation, I'm being instructed how to preach in this time, place and circumstance. Prabhupada was back in, you know, the 70s, and, you know, he was doing this in India, and he was an old man, I'm a young person. You never think like that. Every single thing that Srila Prabhupada said and did is relevant. In fact, it is the most relevant, and we should always, you know, absorb ourselves in that. Here's another little drop of nectar. This is a morning walk, 1975. Now, Jaya Vedas says, just like Gaura Kishore could not write, so it appeared that he did not, that there was something he did not know, although he knew Krishna. So this is on the same point. Here, Jayadvaita is trying to understand how can a Vaishnava appear like they're an ordinary person, even in ignorance. Prabhupada, yes, he knows everything. Otherwise, how Bhaktisiddhanta accepted him as guru? He knows Krishna, that's all. Nalini Kanta. Whatever the spiritual master says, that is also perfect. Prabhupada, yes, because he says nothing concocted. Whatever he says from Shastra and Guru. Devotee, Srila Prabhupada, is there any instance when you were chastised by your spiritual master? Prabhupada, oh yes, oh yes. I remember that moment very well. Very valuable, yes. Satsarup. When you were speaking to one man, Prabhupada, yes. He became very angry and chastised me. Jagajivan. Srila Prabhupada, was this during a lecture by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta? Prabhupada, yes. I was not, one of my older godbrothers, he wanted to speak something, so I leaned, and I immediately became Prabhupada's love, so he chastised him. He chastised him more than me. So someone just went to say something to Srila Prabhupada while Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was leaning, speaking. Prabhupada just leaned over to listen and he got chastised. And the other person who actually spoke, he got chastised more.
Why did he get chastised?
For diverting his attention for a split second of what his guru was saying. His spiritual master was actually speaking a lecture. And Srila Prabhupada was sitting and listening. And for a split moment, he leaned over to hear what someone, you know, someone give you a little tap. He leaned over just to hear what he was something. Immediately, got chastised. And Prabhupada saying that he remembers that moment as very, very, very valuable. Here is a little discussion again about the nature of Srila Prabhupada's hearing from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, even though much of what he was saying sometimes, you know, was not being properly able to digest at that time by Srila Prabhupada. So there's a discussion here on the Brahma Samhita, which has a commentary and a translation by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. So Kirtananda is saying, why don't you write some purports to that? To Bhaktisiddhanta's Brahma Samhita. It would be nice if you would write some purports to it. Some of us have difficulty understanding Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. Prabhupada, yes, so if I get some time, my time is very limited. So even there is difficulty. Let them read over and over again. Then they will understand. Why should we change it? Let it be presented as Bhakti Sarasvati has given. Then don't give more than one or two pages at a time. Their brain will be puzzled. And he laughs. Yes, when Guru Maharaj was speaking, at least my brain was puzzled. Even he would speak in Bengali, it was very difficult to understand. He was speaking from a very, very high platform. But I wanted to hear him, that's all. But I did not understand it. That he appreciated, that this boy does not go away, he hears. Actually, that was my position. In the beginning, I could not understand what he was speaking, but I wanted to hear him, that's all. I was very much anxious to hear him, and that he marked. And he was kindly pleased on me that he wants to hear, he does not go away. That was my policy, that let me hear, even if I do not understand, let me hear, that's all. Yes, actually I did not understand in the beginning what he was speaking. So Bhaktisiddhanta's writing is not very easy to understand, yes, but we should try, read and read again, and simply that vibration will help us, that's all. It is transcendental vibration, not that everyone will understand, but if you simply give oral reception to the vibration, that will make him advance. Not exactly that anyone has to understand it, yes. Just like a man is sleeping and someone is calling him. In his sleeping condition, he does not understand. By calling, he gets up because that vibration is there. Not that in his sleeping condition, he is understanding what is this sound coming. So similarly, we should give reception to the transcendental vibrations made by Krishna and his bona fide representatives. And that will make us awakened. Not that we will understand everything. So again, very, very nice analogy there. So, okay. Now, here we go to the third meeting, which is in 1935. What I might do is okay here, so this is it at Radhakund. We're almost finished. So later that year he sent preachers to Burma. In October, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati stayed at Radhakund for 1 month in a small house constructed by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He installed deities at Kunjabihari Math. It was at this time that Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta met with Srila Bhaktisiddhanta and heard the prophetic comment of Gunjabi, there will be fire. This was in connection with Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's disciples fighting over the rooms at the Bagh Bazaar, Gaudiya Math. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, after discussing with A.C. Bhaktivedanta the nature of the arguments between his disciples, turned to Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta and said, Amar Icha Chila Kachul Bhai Karana. I had a desire to print some books. If you ever get money, print books. So this is, we see, preaching is the essence. And that was imbibed from the very first, and here, literally the last meeting with Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is beginning to assess that because his disciples and followers are becoming more attached to the facilities of preaching in the form of big temples and what have you, even to the point where they're fighting over them. He's therefore chalked out a plan which is presented to Srila Prabhupada, who's his mark from the very beginning, knowing that he will execute. And he's saying, I had a desire to print some books. If you ever get money, print books. So there's a very specific instruction. So therefore you see how Srila Prabhupada, books are the basis, and that instruction coming from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. Sometimes we may fail to see the significance of his instructions, but by book distribution being the real spearhead of preaching, it will protect us, you know, for thousands of years to come from all the attacks of Maya in the form of being attached to the various facilities of preaching, in the form of big temples and opulent prasadam and so many, you know, and position and so many things. By distributing books, it actually undermines all, you know, Maya's attacks. So this is a very, not only is it a particularly effective way to reach the masses and to utilize all the resources of the world for, you know, in preaching, but it also protects the devotees themselves. So, very, very important instruction, and we should never, you know, forget the reasons where that initial instruction for book distribution sprouted from that sentiment and that, you know, analysis of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. Here, there is a letter to someone in Bombay, and he's saying, the present Vrindavan city is the excavation of the six Goswamis headed by Srila Rupa and Sanatana Goswamis, who were deputed by Lord Chaitanya to re-establish the Bhakti cult, and in execution of the order of Lord Chaitanya, the six Goswamis lived there, made a vast research in the sastras, and left behind them a vast literature of pure Bhakti cult to be broadcast all over the world by the later acharyas. As such, my spiritual master, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj, made a great effort to execute the order of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and we are fortunate enough to meet him for service. Apart from his various uncommon activities in the line, he was kind enough to order me to propagate the same cult in English language, to preach the cult in the foreign countries, and in obedience to his order, I am trying to do my bit. But I am practically struggling very hard for this job without any tangible success. So this is very 1958. Still in India. The League of Devotees is registered to make this movement in an organized way, and I wish to inquire if any cooperation and help can be expected from your honor. So here, again, Srila Prabhupada tracing back the instruction for book distribution to the fact that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructed his disciples to write and then distribute transcendental literature on the Bhakti cult to firmly establish, you know, the cult. So that is another very important. Not only does book distribution reach the masses very effectively and protects the devotees from Maya, but book distribution, you know, the books themselves contain so much scientific knowledge by which to understand, you know, the science of bhakti and place it on a very, very firm ground, because it's not like there are sometimes many religious sentiments in which movements grow, but because that sentiment can change, they all collapse, all of them. But because the books are the basis, it is a foundation of knowledge which maintains the Krishna consciousness movement for all time, both individually and, you know, collectively. So these very, very you know, important instructions. I'm going to skip a little bit. See, maybe we'll finish on that. And I've got, you know, just a couple of notes. some more instruction there. I'm going to just go to the final instruction. So that one page. You bear with me. Here, Srila Prabhupada, this is an initiation lecture he's giving to Satchabhama Dasi, and a Gayatri initiation to some devotees. So he's saying, so officially I was initiated in 1933, and just before 3 years of his passing, which I believe is probably about 3 weeks. What's that? That he departed?
Yes.
Yes, as I say, sometimes the dates vary.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But,
as I read it,
So here, he was initiated in 33, so he's taking it from his initiation rather than when he received the last letter. Yes, that's my confusion. So anyway, I was officially initiated in 1933, just before 3 years of his passing away from this mortal world. So at the last moment also, yes, just a fortnight before his passing away, he wrote me the same thing. I wrote him one letter, and just he replied the same thing, that you should try to preach this gospel amongst the persons who are conversant in English language. That will be very nice for you. Again, another little excerpt here. In 1936, I wrote him one letter. I think by the beginning of December 1936, I wrote one letter to Guru Maharaj. I knew he was a little kind upon me, so I wrote that, Guru Maharaj, you've got many disciples. I am also one of them, but they are doing direct service to you. Some of them are brahmacharis and some of them are sannyasis, but I am householder, I cannot. Of course, I was giving sometimes some monetary help, but I could not give any direct service. So I asked him that, if there is any particular service I can do for you. So that letter was replied on the 13th of December, dated 13th of December from Puri, and he passed away on the 31st of December, just a fortnight before. So the reply was the same as he wanted me to do this preaching work in 1922 when I first met him, that you try to preach whatever you have learned from me to the English knowing people in English. That will do good to you and to the people to whom you shall preach. That is my instruction. So I took up direction. And then he passed away in 1936, 31st of December. So I consulted some of my godbrothers, senior godbrothers. Guru Maharaj has told me like this, what can I do? So you have heard the name of Professor Sanyal, and there was other godbrothers. They asked me to write on the Vaishnava Siddhanta in English. So perhaps in 1935 I wrote one poetry. He was very pleased since then. He was insisting me that you write on, preach on in English. So he's describing how he wrote a beautiful prayer for his spiritual master who he loved. And at that time he noticed how that he should certainly preach. At that time I was thinking, what can I do? So anyway, after his passing away, this factory-guided paper was started as late in 1944, I think, because the expenditure was 300, 400 rupees per month. One final quote. This is from a lecture on Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's appearance day. So in 1936 he was to pass away by the 31st of December. So I do not know. Out of my own accord I wrote him one letter that, Guru Maharaj, you've got many disciples. Some of you are directly serving you. I could not do so. I am a householder. So if you give me some direct service to you, it will be very kind of you. So he replied that letter that, you try to preach in English language, then the persons who will be instructed by you and both yourself will be benefited. Again, he said the same thing which he ordered me in 1922 at the first sight. Then there he passed away in 1936. Then there were other god brothers. I consulted. Guru Maharaj said like this, what can I do? So they also encouraged me. I was writing. There was a paper and the harmonist. Then by their desires I started this Bhakti Godhead 1944. That was also started on his advent day. That advent day Bhakti Godhead was started, yes. There was a meeting and many friends came. We first started this Bhakti Godhead on his advent day. This advent day, 1944. So our paper, Bhakti Godhead, the advent day is also today, yes. Doubly auspicious, says Hamsa Dutta. Prabhupada, yes. So at that time, there was no sale of Bhakti Godhead. I was publishing about 1,000 copies and distributing, so there was no income. I was spending 300 or 400 rupees from my pocket. At that time, I had income. So, that concludes some of our quotes, but it does give a very good insight into the very prominent service that we should render Srila Prabhupada as the founding chara of our movement. And it also, as knowing that he is the founding chara, he gives us an insight into how we should conduct our spiritual lives for thousands of years to come. So if anyone has any quick comments or questions, everyone looks very satisfied.
Yeah? There's really no other points, of course, if you talk about the guru disciple or the proper etiquette, which is obviously displayed properly, especially the proper part towards his spiritual master, even when he did make mistakes. But these days, there are groups, World Vaishnava Organization, probably people saying the word Prabhupada Demuvis, and yet in the same breath almost they ridicule certain leaders within, say, ISKCON, for example, who are followers of Prabhupada. So I'll ask that question on those Prabhupada Demuvis, and they actually be taken, had he taken, for example, those people who will consider themselves followers of Prabhupada but still make ridicule of certain
People who ridicule someone who's representing Prabhupada is actually ridiculing Prabhupada.
But they still say Prabhupada
follows. So therefore, it's a lack of understanding of the rules and regulations. And Prabhupada's principle was, and we saw this in New Zealand when there was actually a so-called splinter group. There's no such thing as a splinter group, but they thought they were a splinter group. You're either basically in or you're out, in one sense. But they had a whole different method of preaching, which was not books of the basis preaching is in essence. It was a whole, let's play guitar and have long hair and preach a little bit from the Bible and a little bit from this and a little bit from that. And, wear Western clothes, and no one has to shave up. Just loosen the whole thing up a bit. Now, when Prabhupada went to New Zealand, he just allowed them both to come freely to the temple and hear and take his instructions and what have you. He was very careful not to discourage whatever attachment to him and to Krishna that they had, and at the same time he did clearly point out that there were ways that he liked things to be done and that he would like everyone to come to that standard. So we have to be careful not to stamp out someone's enthusiasm to become Krishna conscious and to be attached to Prabhupada. At the same time, within that, gradually, the proper rules, regulations and mood of what actually Prabhupada would like his followers to do has to be established. But certainly, if there are very serious offensive behaviour, it's better not to associate at all with such persons. If the behaviour is not you know, particularly outwardly offensive to Prabhupada or, you know, the ISKCON devotees, the disciples that they're associating with, then there can be some association. There's another danger that sometimes when Ramai Swami actually pointed out to me one time, that sometimes when you associate even with the better elements of a group who are somewhat like a splinter type group, it can open up the doors for the more radical elements to enter. And so you've got to be a little careful how accommodating you can be. So there is a fine line between being careful not to dampen anyone's enthusiasm to approach Srila Prabhupada, even though they may not be following what he would consider the proper path of, you know, towards pleasing him. At the same time, it should gradually be made evident, as such as what we're doing today, what really pleases Prabhupada. So there's being accommodating like that, and yet there is a definite danger in that we can't open up the floodgates for all sorts of radical nonsense people to come in and cause all sorts of major difficulties. Mm. When that comes, it's better not to associate. Mm. Alright, so I'll leave it there. Thank you very much for your attention. Hare Krishna.